Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Songwriters on Process podcast. My name is Benno Papari, and since 2010, I've run the Songwriters on Process website, where you can find more than 200 conversations with songwriters about the creative process. I'm not here to talk about tour stories, band drama, how a band got its name, or favorite foods. My goal is to treat songwriters as writers, plain and simple. This is an intelligent conversation about the writing process between two writers. And today's interview is with Taylor Goldsmith of Dawes. Now, this is the second time I've interviewed Goldsmith. The first time was, I think, 2011. And I think I remarked in the interview, it's transcribed on the Songwriters on Process website, how silly I felt because of how learned and well-read Goldsmith is. I have a PhD in English literature, and I think I felt I was put to shame by his reading list and how much reading he does. I mean, I think I read a lot, nothing compared to this guy. And I think that is reflected in his creative process and his lyrics as well. For example, right now he's reading the Iliad. What is it about these songwriters going back and reading the classics? Craig Finn of the Hold Steady told me a few months ago he was reading Moby Dick, and now Goldsmith is reading the Iliad. And he likes to get invested in the story of the artist. He told me, I get caught up in the story of the artist. That's a big part of what inspires me, you know, and he said, yeah, I like the idea of this album, and we could probably substitute album for book, but this album or this book talking to that album and the collective story of the artist and how the works respond to each other. You know, I told him that I don't like to read more than one book by an artist because I like to get other voices in my head, but that's not him at all. When he reads one book, he likes to read all the books by that artist. And he says, I have this weird completionist thing in me. So whereas, like I said, I read one book and feel like, okay, I want to read another artist just to have another voice in my head. He sees that through. So one book, not with him. He reads everything by that artist, but you can listen and hear just how many books he reads. Now he's constantly reading, and just, I think that makes such a big difference in who he is as a songwriter. And again, you know, we talked 10 years ago and I felt silly, and we talked, you know, a couple weeks ago and I felt silly again because the man is just so well read, it's ridiculous. So I enjoyed this. He's got some great answers and just great awareness into his process. So enjoy my interview with Taylor Goldsmith of Dawes. I was looking at our last interview, and again, this was, I think, pre-family for you.
Yeah,
and you said,
yeah.
I think I asked you if you were a disciplined writer, and you said, no, you depend on inspiration. So is that still the case now? I mean, I find that we have four kids, and as a writer, I can't depend on inspiration.
Yeah.
I have to have discipline. So where do you fall in that camp as far as discipline versus just doing it when the muse strikes?
There's a lot of aspects, a lot of ways to answer that. But yeah, definitely need discipline now, especially with the kid around. I think that before, if I was going to devote a week, you know, devote in quotes, a week or two to writing, a lot of that consisted of just watching movies and reading books. And then if a song started showing up, then I would follow it. And if it didn't, I wouldn't really think that much about it. And now the thinking is much more along the lines of this kid's asleep for the next 2 hours. There's no time to like go on, a social media account. There's no time to check email. I got to get right into this song. I do that sometimes. I mean, right now I'm actually not in like a writing phase, so I'm not really, there's not a whole lot of pressure right now, because especially we have a record coming out in a few weeks, but or a few days, but yeah, so like that is what it's become. Like now I have to take advantage of whatever time I'm offered. One thing that was a big thing for me is I had to break down all of my completely arbitrary rules that I was creating for myself, which I think the more I zoomed out on it was really just excuses that I was using to not work. I think a thing I often said, I probably said it to you, was that I couldn't write on tour, that I just couldn't.
Right.
And the reality, all I had to do was change the way I said that. It could be, I hadn't written songs on tour, but all I needed to start saying was, I haven't yet written songs on tour, but it's something I'd like to do. And then I'm not giving myself permission to fuck off. And then I did start writing on tour, because I started at least acknowledging it as possible. Cause before I wasn't even allowing that. So I never felt like, oh, I don't need to go pick up the guitar and sit in the back lounge of the bus because I don't write on tour. And I think a lot of writers create these little architectures of rules that aren't reasonable and aren't real. I've never been the kind of guy that, not to say that I can't, but I've never been the guy that's like having a conversation with you at a bar and all of a sudden grabs a cocktail napkin and starts writing down lyrics in the busy bar. It's not that extreme, but I also have no needs. I don't need an instrument. I don't need to be at home. I don't need a certain nice pen that I like. I don't need a typewriter or a notebook. That stuff has helped, or some of that stuff I've never owned. But to me, it's like, how do I continue to like release anything that starts creeping up as a habit or a need?
It's funny you say that, because I interviewed Britt Daniel from Spoon a couple months ago, and he actually told me that he sits in bars with a laptop and listens to conversations.
Wow. That's really cool.
And I can just envision him like sitting in a bar, you know, and you see Britt Daniel in the corner and you think, you know, he's typing away. He's actually listening for lyrics. So
I heard that the guy that wrote co-wrote Are You Strong Enough to Be My Man told me that story. David Bearwald, I think his name is, but he was at a bar because he hadn't written the lyrics, and they were all stressing him out. They were recording the track and they had the melody, and he just went to the bar across the street from the studios, really nervous. And he just sat there, and like the two men next to him were breaking up, and one of them was saying to the other, I don't think you're strong enough to be my man. And he just made that a Sheryl Crow song.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Back to the kids. I mean, not exactly what you say, like, back then, before kids, it was, hey, you know, you got all the time in the world. But when our kids were taking naps, it was, I have 2 hours. But I found that made me so much more productive, because if you told me now, write for 2 hours, I'd be like, well, I don't need to. Mm-hmm. It's funny because I'll create false deadlines for myself. So we live in DC and I'll go to New York for work a lot, and I'll get more done on that 3 hours on the train than if I sat here for 3 hours, because wow, I know that I have to put my laptop away. And it's kind of like oddly comforting, because I know that shit's going to get done.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a weird feeling to know that, yeah, don't stress, because you know that you have to get it done and you just manage to. So I found that made me more productive actually having less time.
Yeah, I agree. That and also deadlines. I think like if I'm sitting on 3 or 4 songs, but if you told me the end of next week you're going to go in and record an album, I'll have enough songs. I mean, I can't make any claims as to the quality, but I can get them written.
Yeah.
Deadlines are really helpful in that sense too.
Yeah. When you were writing, you talk about not writing on tour, because some songwriters tell me they deliberately don't write. Like, there are times when they will say, yes, it's not that I don't want to, this is a non-writing time, because that will give me time to think about song ideas. So were you like that, where it was kind of like, I deliberately won't write and won't even think about songs?
If I did anything deliberately in that sense, it was, I deliberately did not give any power to the concept of writer's block.
Yeah.
If I stopped writing, I would, there was a time, like I remember 2013, I didn't write a song for 10 months. And I knew it was exactly 10 months because I was counting, because I was stressed.
Wow.
And I didn't know what was going on. When you panic in any sort of situation, you're not helping. If anything, I think I contributed to the problem by being really nervous about it. Obviously, eventually another song came and all was well. But after that point, and then the songs that I did write after those 10 months, I really liked. And so I started trying to get into this headset of I don't care if I don't write a song for 6 months, or if I don't write a song for a year. If that is some sort of incubational period for me to start really like, you know, sit on some feelings that need time to really like find their own ways of expressing themselves, then I'm going to like be excited. Cause I do have a choice as to how I react to it. And I could react to it by being like, fuck, I'm never going to write again. Or I can be excited and say, this history has shown me that I have reason to believe that this is a good thing, that something cool is going to come out of this. So I don't allow myself to ever get stressed about not writing songs. I also don't really subscribe to the idea of just writing to write because it's like exercising a muscle. That might be true. That might be a more responsible way to look at it. But for me, that triggers my writer's block thinking. Yeah. So I just like the whole thing of like, oh, I write a song a week because it's a muscle and I need to keep it active. I don't really subscribe. I don't think say it's wrong. I just don't do it.
Yeah. So when you're in a rut, the ruts don't bother you at all. And so,
I'll definitely pound the pavement. I'll definitely like run up against the wall and ram into it. And I'll get defeated and I'll walk away with my head hung low. But it's not like I just don't even try. I have to try.
Yeah.
But I don't start telling myself stories about what that might mean. I just didn't write a song.
That's interesting. Are there things you do maybe to try to stimulate a little bit if you find that you're in a rut, things that you do, techniques?
I'll go to certain kind of writers.
Yeah. Oh, really? Okay.
Like right now I'm reading, right now I'm reading the Iliad by Homer, and it's not, as you can imagine, I'm enjoying it, but it's by no means informing my life as a writer, at least not in any ways that I'm clocking. And let's say hypothetically, I felt like I was in a rut right now. I really needed to write a song. What I would probably do is I'd stop reading the Iliad and I would go to these more lyrical writers that have been really inspiring in the past, guys and gals that really start making my brain fire and start thinking in lines. And then that's gotten me out of it before. Like, you know what? I really need to read some Joan Didion, or I really need to get back to Don DeLillo or whoever it is that I feel like helps me. So that'll be one thing I would do.
So we were going to talk about reading later on, but since you brought up, and I mean, Craig Finn last month told me he was reading Moby Dick. And oh, so cool. I've never heard Moby Dick, and I read the Iliad in ninth grade. So you can't say the Iliad, not have me say, oh, wow, you know, why the hell? I'm fascinated by that. Cause that's not a normal, let's be honest. That's like a ninth, you know, that's something read in high school. People don't normally return to that. What made you think about reading that? I'm fascinated by that.
I there was a time when I was like late teens, early 20s, where and a good amount of snootiness, where I just wanted to read all the classics, whatever the hell that meant. And so I was reading all like of the Russians and all of you know, finding Balzac, and then of course like F. Scott Fitzgerald and Hemingway and the American like classics, and then I moved on from it and I started getting very much into modern classics, whatever that means. And again, finding people like Joan Didion, Don DeLillo, Thomas Pynchon was major for me. I couldn't stop reading him until I read them all. Like he was one of those moments for me, and that was really fun. But then, you know, guys like Franzen and Kesey and like books that are still classics, but just more modern.
Yeah.
And so in this last year, I thought like, man, I've been doing that for the last like decade, and it would be really fun to go back to that feeling that I was getting when I was reading Crime and Punishment and Moby Dick and these books that I was reading. I was eating my vegetables, and I want to go eat some more vegetables. So my choices have been weird, but I started like with ancient like Asian philosophy, like Confucius and the Art of War and the Tao Te Ching. I'm sure I'm saying that wrong. And then I also, out of nowhere, I just picked it up off the shelf one day. I don't know why I started it, but then I felt like I had to finish it. But I started The Life of Samuel Johnson by James Boswell. And that was 1400 pages. And my wife was like, why are you reading this? I was like, I don't know, but I'm liking it. and so I finished that. That took up a few, several months. And so now, with where the shelf is and with where the like where Confucius and Art of War were, next to that are the Greeks. So I'm doing the Iliad, and I'm going to try to read the Republic after this. I just feel like a lot of the modern guys that I like reading, like I've been really enjoying reading William T. Volman, and he'll make a lot of references he's so well read. And so like when he talks about Herodotus, or I don't think I said that right, but or Plato, like I don't have these reference points, and it would be fun to get back into the Pynchons and the Volmans. And like when these crazy names come up, I'll be able to say like, oh yeah, I actually know what he's talking about, even if it's very relative.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to say is you read the Iliad and you realize, or the Odyssey, whatever, and then you realize how many references come from that in contemporary writing. And, the most valuable religion or class I ever took in college, and I'm not a religious person, was the Old Testament as literature, because that you just almost have to read that to recognize all, so many right things, religious or not, that it influences.
Yeah. Well, totally. That's actually a few books down from Plato. So I think I'm getting to the Old Testament fairly soon, but you listened like deeply to any Leonard Cohen or certain eras of Bob Dylan. And I'm not even talking about the Christian era of Bob Dylan. And these Bible references are nonstop, and they're really effective. They're really great. So even if it's just me mining for material, I really want to read the Bible. I really want to, I read the New Testament years ago, but I've never read the Old Testament. A lot of this stuff, I'm always trying to see if there's a way to like lift, and if there's a way to take something and make it mine, invert it in some way and make it mine. I'm struggling with that with the Iliad, just because it's about a bunch of people just killing each other.
Right.
in a very gruesome ways. And so there hasn't been a moment for me to like find a way in, but that doesn't mean I'm not enjoying it and that it's not serving the purpose.
That's a heavy book to read. So I learned this from a songwriter like 5 years ago, because I was only a one person, one book at a time person. And then I started reading. Now I read three books at a time. Wow. And I read a novel. So here's my order. I read a novel, I read a nonfiction book, and I read like a rock bio.
Oh, cool.
And I just find that I need like a break. So if I'm reading that heavy novel, that rock bio serves as a good counter. And I find that when I'm not reading that novel, somewhere I feel like it's still stewing back in my mind. So is there a counter to those heavy books, or are you a one book at a time person?
I want to do what you're saying, because I'd love to take breaks, but part of me also wants to just finish it. Like not that I'm not enjoying it, but I don't want to be reading the Iliad in 2 months from now.
Yeah.
I get really excited about whatever the next thing is. And so part of me just wants to just stick with it and get those 20 or 30 pages a day if I can. But what I will do to that point is I will, like when I was reading Boswell, I was listening to the bio of Thelonious Monk. And so I'll do the rock bio thing or jazz bio thing, but I'll listen to it like while I'm exercising or something. Not that those aren't worthy of sitting down and really reading, but I find that for me and my brain and my retention, I don't really need to know the years, the names of the venues, the names of every band. So like some of that stuff that I want to really glom onto in a novel, in like a book like Thelonious's bio, I'm like, whatever, I don't really need any of those facts that just blew by me. Unless I'm like a historian or I'm a different kind of fan, but I'll listen to stuff like that. I'll listen to nonfiction.
Do you get, so Hemingway, speaking of the classics, Hemingway said all writers should go to art galleries, and as far as inspiration. So I'm curious outside, how much inspiration do you get from, obviously from books, but other types of art?
It's dangerous for me to talk about my love of movies, because I immediately start sounding like an asshole. like my wife like rolls her eyes at me when I start like, oh, this one Antonioni film from 1962, and she's like, shut up, you suck. And she's right. So I'm like that really like snooty film like foreign films from back in the day, 60s and 70s and before. I love it. I find like watching Ingmar Bergman movies is as rich as any like Victorian novel, and the dialogue, especially like considering that I'm reading it, is so like I'm already seeing it as a line. So I find that it's really informative for my trip. So I watch a lot of movies, and it's all the ones that people would make fun of, but I don't go to museums as much as I'd like. And I is there more to that Hemingway quote? Cause I've always wanted to find my way in, but I appreciate certain artists, but typically I'm the kind of guy that like, I'll go right up to the little sign next to the piece. And all of a sudden, once I have context of their life or how the circumstances under which this art was made, all of a sudden I'm like, wow, Marcel Duchamp's really fucking cool. And it's all about him and it's less about the work. And I don't want to be that way. I want to be overwhelmed by the piece. I'm a little guilty of subscribing. This is kind of the antithesis of our interview, of your podcast. I get caught up in the story of the artist. I get caught up in like, when I fall in love with a filmmaker, like when I fell in love with David Cronenberg and I'm watching Videodrome and Dead Ringers and Naked Lunch, which are perfect, then I just want to watch everything. I want to watch all of his like B-horror movies at the beginning of his career. I want to watch History of Violence and Eastern Promises and these and movies that, not to be a jerk about someone I really care about a lot, but I don't know if I would have cared. But all of a sudden I'm like, I'm in. And it's same with like Reactor by Neil Young or Trans by Neil Young, records that I don't know if I would have responded to, but because they're in this story of Neil, I'm becoming fixated. So I think that's a big part of it. That's a big part of what inspires me too, of this sort of, myth, like this legend building. And you know, I'm not pretending that I'm on the level of any of these people by any stretch, but you know, I'm telling myself some story and I don't take myself too seriously, but I do like, I have a lot of fun with that. There's a reason why they call it playing music and not working music. I like the idea of this album is talking to this album because I did this and I said this, and this song is a reaction to it. I don't expect anyone to clock it, but I'm having fun. And so I like looking for that in other artists. Like, so like, even though there's no words, like a lot of the jazz that I'll want to listen to, and how one, like how Wayne Shorter goes from early Miles Davis to his own solo stuff. And then eventually Weather Report and Native Dancer and all this stuff. And the way that he's changing his phrasing and the way that he's more notes to less notes, like more chords to less chords, this economy, that stuff will all find its way into like me writing a song with lyrics that really has nothing to do with his medium. So, but yeah, a lot of it is just like, it's less about the piece and it's more about the art and artist. And I don't, it's working. I don't know if other writers would roll their eyes at that, but that's how it's always been for me.
I got to get there, man. Cause people ask me like, who's your favorite author? And my whole thing is when I read one author, I want to get another voice in my head. So I've never been the type of person to say, I'm just going to read everything by one writer because I feel like I've got a certain amount of time. I'd rather get five voices than just one.
I get that. That makes more sense. But yeah, I sort of like, I have this weird completionist thing where when I fell in love with White Noise, it was like, okay, I have to read all of them. And so I did. I read every Don DeLillo book and I love him so much. But some of them were impossibly great. And some of them I could have spent my time reading something else really special. I hear you, but it's weird. It's just like the way I've been wired. And then a friend of mine pointed out, cause I said, I don't know when that started with me. And he said, are you kidding? You've been like that since we were 12. Like you've read a Kurt Vonnegut book and then you bought them all in one day and you just sat there reading them all. Like, you've always been this way. And it goes for I'm a Bob Dylan completionist. I'm a Joni Mitchell completionist because I want to see how certain eras of a career talk to other eras of a career.
Yeah. So I'm guessing then if you start a book and it's not that good, you're still going to finish it, right?
Typically. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not, I, well, And that's a hard one. I mean, because if there have been friends of mine where I've said like, oh man, you got to try this book, and they read 30 pages and like, I don't like it. Like, what? Like, that's not the book. That's just the 30 pages.
Yeah.
There have been plenty of books where I didn't like it 30 pages in, and then I stuck it out and was so grateful I did. But there's a line, you know, that's like, you could give it 200 pages, and then if I don't like it, it's probably fair to say I'm not going to like it.
Right, all right. So let's talk about the process. I found in the past couple of years of people being inside, not touring, that a lot of songwriters have been surprised how many song ideas they get doing mundane activities. I will give you a list: vacuuming, gardening, cleaning, doing the dishes, folding clothes, those mundane activities, something about the conscious, you know, that part of your brain turns off. So do you get song ideas? Have you gotten song ideas doing those really mundane activities ever?
One thing that happened to me like that was like, you know, we had a kid, our kid's a year and a half. So he was born, in February of 2021. And so it was like COVID time, like vaccines were like either just showing up or we weren't vaccinated yet. But anyway, there's been a lot of this time of like some tiny human learning how to sleep and not. And so we've been awake at all crazy hours. And there was one morning in particular when we were just hanging out in his corral while I'm bleary eyed and exhausted, and he's just like super psyched, and it's 5 a.m. And my guitar was like a arm reach away, and I grabbed it and I just wrote this whole song, and the lyrics felt like really strong and really like beyond me, like not in like a someone was working through me, not like that, but just like, oh, I didn't think I'd like something that much of mine right now, and I do, and it fell out. And so like watching him play with his like 1-year-old toys when I'm dead tired, like that was surprising. I didn't think that would be happening. So that's something. And then, I mean, I work in weird ways where like I'll have an idea for a song and then I'll just put it away for a long, 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 long time. Like I had this idea for a song, House Parties and Local Bands, and I wrote down the title and I kind of knew how it might work. And I didn't touch it for like 5 or 6 years. And I would go to that notebook and I'd see that. I'm like, oh, I remember that. I'll probably never write it, but like, there it is. And then sure enough, in the last year and a half, I did write it. And I really like it. And so it's like, sometimes I don't remember when that was, that inspiration moment happened. I might've been vacuuming or doing something mundane. Driving is a big one for me. That's something that I've found where, it sounds counterintuitive, but when I turn off anything to listen to, when I stop listening to music, or I stop listening to a podcast or an audiobook, and I just drive, then all of a sudden, like, lyrics start showing up.
I was going to say, will you drive? Because I hear driving a lot.
Yeah.
Will you go out? Have you ever gone out and go, and I, something maybe happened, I'm going to go for a drive. You'd make driving a deliberate part of the process ever.
I've looked forward to driving for that reason.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, today I'm going to not listen to something because I need to finish this verse. I've had that, but I've never just gone. I should do that. That would be cool.
Go ahead.
It's fascinating to me, like how it'll show up for different people. I also started this time doing co-writing, and COVID style Zoom writings, but now that things are different, now I'm like writing with people in the room. And who I am as a writer, as an individual for Dawes, and who I am as a co-writer, how anybody is as a co-writer, is so wildly different. Like, I got invited, I got invited to go write songs with Brad Paisley.
Wow.
At his house in Nashville. And I was there for like 3 days, and we were really good friends now. We were just becoming friends in that moment. So I didn't know how he did his thing. And the co-writing thing is a trip, because he would walk into the room and be like, here's a hook. Here's how the line will, here's like a cool wordplay thing, very like Willie or Christofferson kind of wordplay line that he has. That's all he had. There's no guitar parts. There's no other like aspect. And it, we, if we both responded, we would start riffing and then we'd just go into the room and start writing. But it was very much like, all right, I'll be back at noon tomorrow. Let's start at noon. And that is so foreign to me, writing for myself. I mean, I know I, you know, we both talked about having kids and needing to write, but even at that, even when that's the case, it's still a private experience. So if I do go into the room and don't write anything, no one's going to care. But when I'm at Brad's house and he's coming back to where I am at noon, we can't just not get something done, you know, right. Like the way that I can by myself. And, but we did every day. And, it, that was kind of eye opening because it felt like, oh, that's why you're you, because you can access this when you need to. And his ideas were all really top shelf good. I'm we all have bad ideas. I'm sure he has ideas that aren't good, but he doesn't share those. But it was really, that was like, oh wow, I'm hanging out with pros right now. Like this, that was eye opening. To like, oh, that's why there's people that exist in this stratosphere.
Yeah. When you write by yourself, do you have a favorite? As far as the ritual, do you have a favorite room? Like for me, I say this all the time. My ritual is I never write and revise in the same chair. For me, like I need to be in a different space. So actually in my office, there's two chairs, the writing chair, the revising chair. And I just know that's a part of my ritual. So I'm curious, is there ever things that you do? It could be a favorite chair, favorite room or time of day, anything like that, where you tend to be more successful.
Not really. I've written some cool stuff where I'm sitting right now and that's felt really good, but I've also just kind of ended up in different places around the house. One thing that I will do is I'll keep trying it in different spaces. Like I will, or different instruments. I'll play it on a different guitar. I'll play it in a different key. I'll take something that I've been working on guitar and I'll take it to the piano. And then because it immediately feels like a different song. And then that'll bring in new voicings or new chords or new ideas or just new sections, just because I keep switching the instrument around. And then one thing I also do, sometimes I'll finish a song all at once. I'll have that feeling of like, this has to be done today or else it's going to get away from me. I could just feel it. That's at least how it feels. That first thought, best thought thinking, I don't know if it's true or not, but sometimes it feels that way. Other times I leave a song, one verse, one chorus, and it just sits there for months. And with those examples, what I often do is I'll take it to like a sound check. And that's always really eye-opening because then I'll hear it, you know, the bass will be rattling the stage. I'll hear it filling up an empty hall and that'll give me a lot of perspective of like, oh, this is working. Or, oh, these chords are too, there's too many notes in these chords. This riff is too clunky. It's not working. So sometimes just like completely new ideas that the band will come up with and I'll take away from them and take home and try to write to. So that'll be a big thing that I always look forward to is like, okay, this works with me and a guitar, but is this going to work in a sound check?
Interesting. Yeah. All right. A couple more questions. The ideas, I'm assuming you've got like a phone full of voice memos of ideas, right? Like those.
Yeah. And just like, I definitely have like little voice memo instrumental ideas that are waiting.
Do you organize them at all? I mean, because I'm fascinated by songwriters who tell me there's no organizational process. They just have voice memos with no titles, no anything. And I'm like, how long does it take you to go through each one and say, God, where's that idea? So is there any organizing principle behind them?
No, I'll put down like idea 914. So I'll have a date on it. And then when I want to listen to any ideas, because I'm desperate for a musical aspect to bring a lyric idea to, I will type an idea, you know, and so it'll just give me all of them lined up and I'll just start going through them all. I'm not the kind of guy, I don't have them daily or very often at all. So if I have four musical ideas that are kicking around in my head, then that's a lot for me. It's sometimes like a riff will exist forever before I can figure out how to put a lyric to it. Sometimes I'll get a lyrical idea and I'll think to myself, like, this actually feels more like a country song and I'm just going to play with simple chords and figure out a unique way to play it later on, but I'm not going to worry about it. So some songs it'll just be like, whatever gets the words written is what the chords are. And other times the riff dictates what those chords are. That'll come up in different ways. I mean, the thing that my phone is more full of is just a notes section with a bunch of titles and phrases. It used to be in a hard notebook, like a Moleskine, which I still have, but I just don't fill it out anymore. And I will say I felt that was more fruitful. Maybe I'm just romanticizing it and remembering it more fondly, but I feel like when I was more dedicated to having the pen and the notebook around all the time and then writing down anything I could remember or think of, that stuff always, I got more out of that. And doing the same thing in the phone, I don't know why, but I did get less out of it.
It's very much a house divided. There are songwriters who absolutely say what you say, that pen and paper, first of all, everything's there. So if you cross something out, you can at least go back to it. Whereas if you delete something on a phone, it's gone. Mm-hmm. But it seems like the number of people who are sticking with pen and paper is dwindling.
I heard of an interview, Jeff Tweedy talking about it, being like, used to have a notebook. Now I just have notes in my phone and that's fine. And his songs are rad. So
yeah. Do you ever get song ideas? You mentioned driving. What about walking, biking, running, exercising? Does that ever happen?
Outdoors, I feel like, is a real big deal. I don't know why, but a few years ago, I hadn't written a song in a while, and I went to some botanical gardens or something with friends. Didn't think about a song at all the whole time, not once. And just from being outside all day long, I came home and I wrote a song of ours called Things Happen, all just kind of at once. Maybe I'm wrong, but I like to connect those two things. I don't think it's a coincidence. Yeah. Anytime that I really devote to being outside a lot, there's something comes with me. Or comes back home with me. So that feels real to me, but it's never like this epiphany moment of like, aha, there's the title and that's how it's going to work. And let me rush back home. It's never like that for me.
Yeah. Those songs that do come quickly, you less likely to revise the lyrics?
With revisions, it's tough. Like if you tell me that we're going to go and record a certain day, every day I'm going to go over them and change little things. I'm going to change ands to so's, just little tiny things until it's like recorded. And I remember hearing that about Malcolm Lowry, Under the Volcano, when that book was finished and he started doing his book tour. He was kind of crazy. And he would pick up Under the Volcano from like the shelf at one of the bookstores and started editing it.
Oh, like, my God.
Just because it was like just never done.
Sounds
ridiculous.
The things I've written, though, like I wish I could look at the things I've written and go, oh, that's great. But it's typically I look at things I wrote, like I look at my dissertation, which I revised 8,000 times. And I look at it and I go, oh, man, I can't believe that I wrote that. I mean, I wish I could look at things and be like, oh, that's a home run. That's fucking great. But usually it's what?
Yeah. No, I relate to that. I mean, I try to like to help me with that. I try to just look at it like, that's representative of who I was then. Like, you know, songs like that I wrote in 2009, I'll sing on stage sometimes still. Some of them I like, but some of them, like, I can't believe that you guys are liking this because this is weird and this is super sentimental and very self-serious and just gross. But I'll still sing it, but I can get behind it by being like, ladies and gentlemen, let me introduce you to 24-year-old Taylor. You know, I don't have to stand behind it. I'm just kind of his mouthpiece.
Yeah.
And I also, another part of it that helps me stay writing, that helps me stay inspired, is to count on that feeling to be right behind me. There's been no record where I look back and think, I did it, nailed it. And I worry that if I did ever feel that, I would rest a little bit. And so this feeling that I can, that's clockwork, of 6 months after the record comes out, I listen back and be like, what the fuck was I thinking with? And it's not always about the songwriting. Sometimes about the recording. Sometimes it's about the key. Sometimes it's whatever it is. But then often it is about the songwriting. Like, why did that song actually make the album? Or why didn't I change this verse the way I sing it now? It's so much better now. And that's so bad. And now I'm grateful to that feeling, because that means, okay, this means something's brewing, and I'm going to have some new perspective to work from, rather than ever getting to a point like, yeah, I just finished my 12th record, but have you heard my fifth one? It's fucking awesome. Like, that sounds way scarier than not liking anything.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, in closing, I guess that's, you know, as I think it always helps as a writer to know that I would tell my students this when I was teaching, like, your writing process is always taking place. It's taking place when you're in a rut. It's taking place when you're sleeping, eating, whatever. But if you think about the writing process only taking place when you're putting pen to paper, you'll fail. But if you just imagine that it's always taking place, I think that just makes me feel a little better.
That's really cool.
And that's it for the latest episode of Songwriters on Process. Don't forget, you can find all of my interviews with over 200 songwriters on my Songwriters on Process website at songwritersonprocess.com, going all the way back to 2010. You can read them, watch them, or listen to them. So until next time, thanks for listening.